Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy-Giesch with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. Twice a month, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn their tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And before I introduce today's guest, I'd like to take a moment, as I typically do, to define the term revenue marketing. It's basically the process of transforming marketing from being a cost center to a revenue center. And almost every B2B marketer is feeling the pressure to be accountable for some level of revenue or some type of financial metric. And revenue marketing is the discipline to achieve that financial accountability. Now, what I really like about the show is that everyone on the show is actually on the revenue marketing journey, and they're here to share what works, what does not work, and their gotchas, those hidden roadblocks on their journey. With that, I am so pleased to introduce today's guest, Nat Kramer. Nat is the Senior Manager of Demand Generation Marketing for Advent Software. And Nat, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Debbie. How are you?
I am fantastic today. I'm on the West Coast, and it's a beautiful, bright day. I couldn't ask for better. And I got to tell you, I'm tickled to have you on the show. You're one of those people that I consider a career disruptor. And what that means is that typically you come in to fix situations and to disrupt the status quo and to really bring in revenue marketing and transform things. So why don't you start, Nat, telling us a little bit about your role at Advent and maybe a little bit about your career progression that brought you to this spot.
Sure. I really like the term career disruptor. I hope I fit that category. It's certainly an interesting way of thinking about it. And I certainly approach change with the intent to improve things and not just make things difficult. But as we are all more accountable for driving revenue and not just being a cost center, it's really critical that organizations of every size really think about connecting marketing to revenue and working really closely with sales to ensure that everyone is working toward the same goals. And that's really what interested me in the opportunity at Advent. Advent has been around for a long, long time, over 30 years, very powerful producer of software for the financial services space. They had such strong solutions that for years they could really work with a sales focus and a product and solution focus, which would carry them through continued renewals. And then competition just has been heating up, and folks at the top realized that they needed to approach marketing differently, and they sought out someone who had some experience in financial services and tracked me down. So for the past 10, almost 11 months, I've been digging into their systems and looking at their processes and working to apply a real demand generation focus across the organization, and it's really been exciting and rewarding.
So let me ask you, Nat, I mean, clearly you have some financial services in your background, and I love to hear stories about how companies all of a sudden realize, wow, we have to do things differently, and it's going to be driven from marketing, and we need to make these changes. But what was your career progression like that kind of got you to the point that you were a career disruptor and a revenue marketer?
That's an interesting question. It's kind of funny, I think, where as a kid I was interested in mechanical things. At one point I thought I would be an actual automotive mechanic. I loved engines. I loved farming. So far from financial services world, I can't even tell you, right? So far from a hardcore revenue marketing world, it's kind of ironic. But I was also a good writer, and some of my first jobs out of school were in writing, and it was odd that I would become hired for content development, but some of the executives and the teams that had hired me would still just remind me that nobody reads the copy and that you'll never make money being a writer and things like this. This was 20 years ago. And so it was kind of funny to come out of, you know, mechanics and writing, people saying there's no money in your career in college. I studied cultural anthropology, and all my buddies studied finance or, you know, business or something like that. And I got the same story. Oh, you'll never make any money. You'll never have a career. 20, 25 years later, having a mechanical sensibility, being a great writer, and having a cultural lens through which to look at your markets, that combination is ideal for demand generation and really targeted content marketing to drive revenue. I just I'm constantly thinking back about, you know, this, the irony of, hey, that'll never work, that'll never get you anywhere, and then here, all three of those streams combined to really you know, support me in a enjoyable and successful career.
I agree. That's a phenomenal trifecta there. You've got, you know, the writing ability, so you enjoy the written word and you enjoy the power of the written word. Mechanically, you try to figure things out. And I don't think I've ever met anyone, Matt, with a degree in cultural anthropology. But as a major change agent myself, I know that having that background has got to be a fantastic thing for you, because it really helps you understand people. It helps you understand groups. It helps you understand the norms that you have to, you know, break apart and reconfigure in a way that works more toward revenue marketing. I think that is a fascinating background and absolutely perfect for what you're doing right now.
You know, I the more I look back on it, the more I think, how did I know that this would make sense or that this would add up? But, you know, I didn't, clearly. It just got me here. But specifically with cultural anthropology, that field is all about studying groups of people and understanding what they value and how they communicate that value. And that is exactly what modern marketing is all about, you know, with our segmentation and identifying unique characteristics of various segments and understanding needs, wants, fears, concerns, and then appealing to those through our marketing messages. So, yeah, I'm just happy that I took that course.
I think that's fabulous. So let's move on to kind of the topic, and that is, you know, when you and I chatted before, one of the things that you really felt was demand generation and content marketing really cannot be separated, and that when these things work well together, it creates a very effective customer experience. So why don't you share with us your thoughts and your approach around this?
Sure. Yeah, I often am asked, you know, how's that segment coming? How's your list coming? And how were the results? And I have to talk about, well, the content wasn't right, or the message wasn't right. And we dig deeper into, well, how did you determine what message to use? Oh, so the content really matters. And I just need to underscore that, yeah, without the content, you've got nothing. Without the message, you've got nothing. What are you sending to folks if you haven't really thought about what to say or how you want someone to think differently potentially? Content and demand gen are two sides of the same coin, I like to say.
So I want to talk a little bit more about content because, you know, content marketing is huge these days. Everybody talks about it. But, Matt, honestly, most people do not do a good job of content marketing. And I think part of the reason is that when they think about content, they think about what they want to say, the product that they have to sell, versus really understanding that this is a communication process and what you say, how you say it, and how do you help someone think differently is really the impetus. So what would you say to a marketer that is doing content marketing but it's more focused on product? How do you help them become more focused on the customer?
Try to be patient with your product and think really from the perspective of your prospect or the customer. I like to say, without a customer, there is no product. What are you going to sell if there's no one to sell it to? You've got to start with the market. Start with the outside-in way of thinking. What do folks out there who are potential buyers care about? A lot of this is content marketing 101, right? If you're on the boards all the time, if you're on every newsletter and every RSS feed, folks talk about outside in and focusing on the trends and needs and wants of the market. But putting it all together is actually a lot harder to do for many people, I find, than just being able to talk about it. And one thing that's critical is trying to find some primary themes, some major themes that would likely appeal to most folks in your target audience. And what Advent has done in our marketing communications group is identified three or four primary thought leadership pillars or areas around which we'd like to build content, because our market, our customers, by their actions and by what they have actually purchased or not purchased, have essentially indicated that they're interested in these three or four pillars of thought. And those are really our guardrails when we develop content, because as long as they're relevant to these three or four thought leadership pillars, confident that the content we produce is going to be relevant and valuable to most of the folks we send it to, as long as we don't have too much of an inside-out, product-focused, advent-focused, buy now focus. Does that make sense?
It does, and I love the phrase, as you do, the term outside in. It really helps the marketer begin to consider when they're creating content, what is the purpose of this content? What should it inspire? What kind of behavior should it inspire? And then really thinking about and creating thought leadership pillars. I love that. I think that is so effective. So was this something, when you came into Advent, was the company and the group that you were they pretty accepting of we need the thought leadership pillars and it needs to be an outside-in approach versus inside-out approach? Or did you have to do a little bit of education around how and why this is different?
I think a lot of the folks in marketing were pretty much on board with the importance of thought leadership. We have a very strong editorial and PR background that actually is able to connect Advent's mission more with thought leadership than I have seen in the past. But when it came to actually executing on campaigns, a lot of that was coming from another part of the organization, and it was driven more from product, and it was definitely more of a product-focused, low-funnel, buy-now approach. And yes, over time, I've been able to help shift that to the upper-funnel, outside-in thought leadership approach to have more of a nurturing relationship with prospect versus a interrupting, you know, hey, pay attention to us now, I'm sure you want this kind of approach, which in a commodity space where, you know, it's all about price or something, that might work sometimes. It's a numbers game, but with the long sales cycle that we've got in financial services with, you know, six-figure deals, and you really need to take your time and be patient and wait for prospects to raise their hand and come to you because you've built that trust and provided enough value. So to answer your question, a lot of people were really on board with the idea of thought leadership. They're really on board with the idea of the importance of high-quality content, but putting it all together into a program was what was lacking, and that's what I'm doing there now. And I've had some good success along with a lot of support from the teams.
That's a great story, and again, I agree with you. I think content is so incredibly important. It is the common way that we speak back and forth to one another, you know, in the digital world. Content, whether it's a web page or a white paper or a case study or a three-minute video, it's all part of that conversation, and being able to recognize that people are people, right? And you have to understand what their needs are, and you have to appeal to them in a way that they can ingest that and they can make sense of it and they can, you know, make a good decision on it. I mean, those are the things that I think are so incredibly important. So
building trust. It's really about building trust and exchanging value for just a little bit more information about your prospect over time. And just an interesting example of recent success is that for one of our premier products, I wanted to do a very high funnel thought leadership marketing automation or nurture campaign. A lot of the content was very, very lofty. And there was some concern initially that not only was the content too general, but the market that we were targeting didn't respond to email. That was the thought. And I figured, well, let's try it. I focused really carefully on the tone and just the quality of the pieces. And the campaign's been running for several months now, and we've just delivered some six-figure deals off of that program. So, you know, even in the face of folks who aren't used to having a high funnel message, a thought leadership message to a specific audience or a channel that is not necessarily one that is typical for the market, you know, get out there and try some stuff. As long as, like I like to say, as long as it's not wrong, as long as it's not embarrassing, as long as it provides value, try it.
You know, that's something that you and I had chatted about before the show. We had talked about how it seems as though many marketers have lost their sense of experimentation. I work with a lot of marketers who feel like the minute it goes out the door, it has to be perfect from the very beginning. And I don't know how you can achieve perfection when you've literally never tried something before. So can you share a little bit more around your sense of experimentation and what that's meant to the impact you've made on your business?
Sure. Regardless of which organization I'm working for, any opportunity to get in front of a prospect or a customer, I always think, is there a testing opportunity here? Is there an opportunity to learn something about my market? And the simplest, quickest, easiest way to start to learn something about your market, I believe, is with email marketing and A/B testing. And as long as I have, say, 2,000 to 4,000 folks in my list, that's just a general non-scientific, you know, baseline that I work from. I'll often split a list and try two vastly different messages, as long as they kind of fit the core criteria of, does it provide value? Is it wrong? Is it embarrassing? If it checks out on those points, you know, certainly that allows me to get a lot more out the door if I can check those boxes rather than obsessing over perfection. And then I can let the data speak and tell us which version worked better based on the metrics that I outlined before the send. And that just takes opinion right off the table in many cases, not every case, but if I can essentially say, hey, this program version A drove, 1,500 downloads versus, 14 downloads in version B, that's probably a better message and a better version of the campaign, regardless of whether someone liked the appearance of one versus the other better.
You know, when I hear you talk about this, it just makes so much sense, Nat. It's just common sense. Why don't you think more marketers do this?
Well, there's still a lot of pressure for just validating your existence, right? There's been that pressure from the perspective of marketing being a cost center for years, right? So there's this pressure to prove your worth. Maybe you've been doing some really traditional marketing. Then there's a sudden shift to show that you're driving revenue. Folks are sort of caught in a canyon crossing over. And if they would just jump to the other side and embrace revenue marketing and data-driven decisions, they could prove that, hey, they had a test, they had a hypothesis, they had, these results versus those results. This is what happened, and this is what we can do for next steps. And that actually, in my opinion, just bolsters the value of the marketing organization because you're essentially showing such transparency in what you're doing. And you can start to connect your activity to revenue as you get better at it. Nobody's expecting you to go from traditional marketing with very little measurement, being thought of as a cost center, to modern revenue marketing overnight. It takes a while, and it does take a lot of internal communication and buy-in and education. And I don't think there's anyone on this planet who really gets it all. Probably if you put 15 or 20 of the brightest folks together in a room, you might have a complete toolkit for revenue marketing, right? But I really think that if people can just dive in and start measuring and start having hypotheses and start testing, they can get closer and closer to proving their value and associating their activities with revenue.
So I think that's absolutely spot on. I just agree with all of your comments. And in terms of measurement, does your marketing group have some kind of financial metric that you guys are trying to achieve?
We absolutely do. Absolutely. And, you know, some folks might think, oh, no, we've got, you know, a revenue goal. But for me, I feel so much better knowing what my goals are. We've got a big chunk of revenue that we need to prove that we have initiated every year. And we were able to achieve it last year, and we are picking up steam this year. So it's a number that we all rally around and get excited about when we've got wins. And that's really important, too, when you're trying to drive change through an organization, is to have folks understand the metrics, keep the goals as simple as possible. When there's a lot of change going on, sometimes some metrics that used to be easy to measure are not as easy anymore, but the most important ones don't really go away, like revenue. And if you can just keep reminding people on a regular basis of what the progress toward those revenue goals are, folks can get behind the change and can understand where they fit into the big picture of the organization.
And that is very important for people to understand where they fit in, especially as you have all these changes going on. I want to go back to content for a moment, Nat.
Sure.
We kind of got off because I'm always so excited to talk to our revenue marketers, got real number accountability. But one of the things that we were talking about with content is how important it is for establishing trust and for really having that two-way ongoing dialogue with the entire digital, you know, universe. But how do you measure content? I see a lot of marketers, they spend all their time just trying to get content created, and they feel like they're done at that point. I see very few marketers actually measuring how content's performing. Tell me, do you guys do that? What do you do?
Sure. We think of content in two big buckets, or at least I do. Premium content, which is the stuff that our marketing communications team and partners will really put a ton of effort into building beautiful pieces out of. And then we've got just more day-to-day content that might be a slice of a piece of premium content. And so the production of content is one piece, absolutely. And we're really fortunate at Advent right now that we have an entire group is focused on producing this premium content, plus a whole bunch of other great stuff that they do. But when it comes to identifying the effectiveness of content, going back and looking at closed deals and looking at their campaign history and understanding which premium content and which more day-to-day content they have consumed through the course of their buyer's journey is definitely a way to start to understand not only the specific pieces that are most effective, but also the general themes that are most effective. And what we do is we turn that around every quarter or 6 months, and those roll back up into our thought leadership themes. And it's just kind of like a continuous cycle of what worked, what campaigns, what content, what themes were associated with closed deals. Are there some real trends here that we can see? And then we know in terms of next steps and future direction for content production. But when it comes down to proving which of two pieces of content is most valuable or most effective. That's where you really need to get more scientific with having like segments, you're cutting a single segment really tightly, and then having a pure A-B test where you really are limiting your variables and you're presenting one versus another and seeing which is consumed more readily. And then looking further down the buyer's journey to see if it's not just that it was downloaded or engaged with or shared, but that individual or those individuals in that cohort who consumed that content actually became clients. It's one thing to open a piece of content. It's one thing to download a piece of content. But if you've never, ever become a client or an influencer, was that really the best content? I'm not sure.
You know, that's one of the things that we actually hear a lot of marketers talk about, because I think that kind of slid backwards a little bit. They talk about the level of engagement. And what they mean by that is who's opening and looking at the content. And while that's definitely a first step, I think for a lot of marketers, you know, focusing on level of engagement versus focusing on what you guys focus on is, did they engage with the content and become a client? That's a very different take on it, and it's a different focus.
Yeah, I try to look at our metrics as if I'm burning a candle at both ends, the top of the funnel with the day-to-day programs and engagement there, and then the quarterly closed sales, and looking at the connections between the effective campaigns at one end and the closed deals at the other end.
That is a great way to take a look at it. I think that's phenomenal. So another question that I have for you, and gosh, I could stay on the phone with you for about 2 hours just understanding more about what you do, but you know, one of the things that I always love for our guests to share is, you know, what advice would you give to another revenue marketer? And Matt, you know, the situation is, and you and I talked about this, I call you an unconscious competent because you do these things so well, and you're like, well, of course, that's the way it's done. Yet, a lot of marketers are not in your place. They're not as far along the revenue marketing journey as you are. So if you were to meet someone on this revenue marketing journey, you know, what kind of advice would you give them in managing that intersection of demand generation, content, and the customer?
Well, it's critical to have simple goals that are measurable, that folks in the organization from marketing to support to sales understand and can get behind. And for me, that's really revenue. The next is to really just not strive for perfection. You know, we talked about this earlier, we've talked about this before, but I don't think most prospects expect perfection. I think they expect value. And if, you know, the formatting is not 100% perfect in every single device, I think you're mostly okay. But getting stuff out the door is important. You can't be cavalier. You can't be inappropriate. You have to be respectful. It's all about building trust and exchanging value, right? But don't strive for perfection. One of the best ways to do that is to ensure that you have an efficient engine for content production and campaign production. A lot of times internal approvals will slow things down a lot. And what is great to do is to establish internal trust and internal process to the point where, again, you've got some guardrails. You've got some understanding that as long as, you know, one subgroup in the marketing team operates within these boundaries, everything should be essentially approved messaging, you know, signed off on directionally, and not every single character needs to be reviewed by all 19 teams. So having general guardrails, again, for content production and program production really helps get things out the door. And lastly, maybe this is a fourth, repurpose not only content but also campaigns. Point one campaign that worked great in one market, point it just slightly off to a similar market and see how it does. Change up the language a little bit, obviously, to really speak to the prospect, but repurpose wherever you can and see how it works. Don't reinvent the wheel if you don't have to.
I love this advice. I think you're right. I mean, If you can keep the goals simple, measurable, and obtainable, it gets everybody on board. I love the advice and not striving for perfection. And I really loved your internal trust because, again, there's no demand generation revenue marketing group that works in a marketing silo all by itself. There's always other parts of the organization that they have to interact with. So I love having the guardrails and the internal trust built within the team and across marketing and across groups, as well as I do with clients. And I love your repurpose. I've never heard somebody say, and it makes perfect sense to repurpose not just content, but also campaigns, take a campaign and redirect it slightly and see how you can reuse that. So I think that is just a fabulous idea. Well, Matt,
yeah.
Believe it or not, our time is up. I shared with you that this was going to be a very fast 30 minutes. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And to everybody listening out there, have a great revenue marketing day. Thanks again, Matt.
Thanks so much, Debbie. Have a great day.